The next argued case this morning is number 21-1340, Wright Medical Technology Incorporated against Paragon 28 Incorporated. Mr. McPherson.
May it please the court. With respect to patents, the 252, the 253, and the 278, the board made two errors common to all three of those patents. The first error relates to ground one. And the issue there is whether the 2006 application, the priority document, contains written description support for the claim term locking screw. The undisputed facts with respect to ground one are the invention is about plates and screws that attach to small bones. Number two, the 2006 application expressly discloses a bone plate, including a threaded screw hole. And the third fact, the purpose of a threaded screw hole is to receive a threaded head screw. The board erred in finding there was no written description support because they used an overly restrictive interpretation of the law, that a locking screw must be a necessary counterpart to the disclosed locking screw hole. Now, this is contrary to the well-established rule set forward in the Ariad case, which provides that the written description must reasonably convey to a person of ordinary skill in the art that the inventor was in possession of the invention. And the Ariad case provided a framework for that analysis. It's done on a case-by-case basis. You look at the knowledge of a person of ordinary skill in the art, you look at the complexity of the technology, and the predictability of the technology. And here, there's no factual dispute. Paragon's expert, in his direct testimony, in support of their petition, he testified it was commonly known to use either locking screws or non-locking screws with bone plates. He further went on and said that a person of ordinary skill in the art would design plates with either locking or non-locking screws depending upon the type of application. So it's clear here, this is not complex technology. It's predictable. In fact, our expert admits there's two choices, locking screws or non-locking screws. Here, corresponding screw holes in the bone plate match the desired type of screw to use. The board's factual finding on this is dispositive of this issue. The board found the evidence establishes that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have known in January 2006 that one purpose of a threaded screw hole bore is to receive the threaded head of a locking screw. Now, because the spec reasonably conveys a locking screw, there is no need for the board to do an analysis of whether the term locking screw is expressly used or to go further and say it needs to be inherent, that it must be a necessary counterpart to the locking screw hole. We ask the court to reverse the board and find that the patents are entitled to the priority date of 2006 application and neither reference in ground one is therefore a prior art. With respect to the second error that the board made with respect to these patents, the second error relates to ground two, and that's the combination of the Grusin reference and the Fernandez reference. Grusin teaches attaching a plate to small bones, and specifically the small bones of the wrist. And the problem presented is the interaction between the screws that go into the bone plate and the tissue surrounding the screw head. The problem results in damage to tendons and ligaments. And Grusin teaches that even a slightly damaged screw head can cause what's known as scrub necrosis, the tissues and ligaments rubbing against this screw that then kills the tissue. The solution was to reduce irritation and wear by using specially designed screws. And these are smooth, low profile screw heads with no sharp edges extending above the plate. And this is shown in figure 76 of Grusin, which we've duplicated in the blue brief at page 17. The secondary reference, Fernandez, is directed to a different problem. That problem is the insertion of screws at a selectable angular orientation, that the surgeon has the ability to put the screws in at varying angles. Their solution was a screw with a spherical head. You have a rounded head, and you have threads extending throughout the whole spherical head. This is shown in figure 10 of Fernandez, which we've duplicated in the blue brief at page 19. And you can see there are sharp edges that extend above the plate when you put the screw in at any orientation. Paragon's motivation to combine was that using this screw head from Fernandez with the bone plate of Grusin provided flexibility for a surgeon to choose a desired screw angle. The problem is that defeats the express purpose of Grusin. It would increase damage to the soft tissue and make Grusin inoperable for its intended purpose. Fernandez never recognized the problem identified in Grusin. The screw heads are not low profile in Fernandez. The spherical head is entirely threaded, so no matter which orientation you put the screw head in, there's going to be extending, sharp edges extending above the bone plate. And you compare this on a side-by-side view of figures 10 of Fernandez and figure 76 of Grusin, and we did that in our blue brief at page 43. The board never recognized it was the sharp edges of Fernandez that caused the damage. Instead, the court was focused on whether the head of Fernandez extended above or further than the head shown in Grusin. And the board says, Grusin seeks to reduce, but not necessarily to eliminate, the extent to which the fastener extends above a plate. That misses the point. That's only one consideration. Grusin seeks to eliminate scrub necrosis by eliminating sharp edges above the plate. The combination proposed actually increases the sharp edges above the plate. The board recognized that suitability evidence was required. But in doing so, it shifted that burden to the patent owner and said the patent owner did not provide testimony as to the size of the screws, as to the size and durability of the tendons and soft tissue. That burden should have been on Paragon, that their expert needed to address how to accommodate the sharp edges from the result combination. There was no evidence presented by the expert regarding sharp edges protruding above the plate. Because no evidence of sharp edges would not cause damage, there's no substantial evidence of a motivation to combine Grusin and Fernandez. We request the board to request the panel to reverse the board on ground two. With respect to the 443 patent and 278 patents, the board made two errors common to these patents. Both errors relate to whether the K reference includes the S-curve limitation. In the petition, there's a single ground of the combination of K with Heinl. And the petition stated that K does not include an S-curve, but Heinl does. The board erred by not directly addressing the issue presented in this petition. Instead of addressing what the term medial line means in order to determine what the S-curve limitation requires, the board issued alternative rulings. One ruling was, if K does not include an S-curve, then the challenge claims are unpatentable combination of K with Heinl. But it also issued an alternative ruling, and that is, if K does not disclose the S-curve, then the challenge claims are unpatentable in view of K alone. It's this second ruling. That holding is improper because that's not what the petition argued. The petition argued a single ground, and that single ground was a combination of K and Heinl because K did not include the S-curve limitation. If the court finds that K does disclose an S-curve, then we request the court to find that there is no substantial evidence to support this ground, and this ground should be reversed. With respect to the K and Heinl ground that is in the petition does not identify substantial evidence. The petition states that K doesn't include an S-shaped medial line, but it never explains what Paragon understands the medial line to mean and never applies their definition of medial line to show what the medial line looks like in K. And without that, we think the petition is fatally defective. Because without that, you can't then later say, but we're going to bend the K plate to get this S-curve medial line. And in doing so, if you look at the petition, there's no description of what that S-curve would look like, what that medial line would look like after that combination. So they don't describe what their definition of medial line is. They don't describe what the video line looks like before the combination. They don't describe what the video line looks like after combination. And that's a complete failure of proof in their petition. Now, on cross-examination, we asked their expert, when you say medial line, what does it mean? And he said, it's just the medial line of the trunk of the bone plate, ignoring the arms of the bone plate. And we said, that doesn't make sense, because in figure 43 of the 443 patent, it describes that bone plate as having an S-curve. And it says that plate has a shallow S-curve along the medial line. And if you take the expert's definition that you ignore the arms, that plate clearly has a C-curve, not an S-curve. In the petitioner's reply, for the first time, they address the medial line limitation and say, well, it's a line that divides the plate in half laterally. Well, that definition is so ambiguous that any line that divides a plate in half laterally can be straight, can be S-curve, can be C-shaped. That's so ambiguous, it encompasses an unlimited number. As a result, in the final written description, the board never described the evidence that shows what the medial line of K looks like, either before or after modification, and what the medial line of K looks like with this combination that they put forward. This demonstrates lack of substantial evidence, and the challenge claims are therefore patentable. I'd like to address any questions the board has.
Not at the moment. We'll have your rebuttal. Let's hear from the other side. Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to address two misstatements I believe Rights Counsel made in his arguments here today. First, he started off by saying that the board found that the purpose of a threaded screw hole is to accept a locking screw. That is not what the board found. The board went through in detail and found that there were multiple purposes of accepting a locking screw, and that includes, for example, plate benders that were disclosed in the 2006 application. It also includes the threaded shafts of non-locking screws, which were also disclosed in the 2006 application, and a host of other ones, including drill guides, screw guides, and other instruments as well, including a plate positioner. So it's a misstatement to say that the board found that the only purpose of a threaded bore is to accept a locking screw. And I think that's where this analysis gets off track. One second, please. If you look back at what the board actually did, it stepped through the analysis that this court has said is the proper analysis in Ariad, in Power Oasis, and in Tronzo. And in Ariad, the court explicitly said that obviousness is insufficient. And the board's finding was, patent owner has merely established the obviousness of using a locking screw in a threaded screw hole, which is insufficient to show possession of the claim invention. That is clearly the correct standard under Ariad that the board applied, and the board identified substantial evidence to support that finding. The board identified that there was a missing descriptive matter of locking screw in the 2006 application. It found there was no evidence of it. In fact, it found it was undisputed. And that finding was at Appendix 73 and 74. And then it went on to find that non-locking screws were the conventional screws, whereas locking screws were not. And that's in the record at Appendix 1417 to 1418 and 4671. And because of that, it concluded correctly that the 2006 application had no disclosure of locking screws. Then it went on to say, well, is there anything else? Does a threaded bore, which is the only thing Wright could point to as evidence that it did actually possess the locking screw, is there anything that says that the threaded bore actually does disclose or demonstrate possession of a locking screw? And the board found it didn't. And it went through substantial evidence. It looked outside the corners, four corners of the specification, looked at contemporaneous art, took in expert testimony. This was a very detailed analysis spanning 15 pages. They credited testimony in some instances. They discredited testimony in other instances. And it was a factual finding. And there is substantial evidence in there. In fact, there's a wealth of substantial evidence to show that it was an obviousness. It was obvious to use a locking screw with a threaded bore, but a threaded bore does not demonstrate possession of a locking screw. And that distinction between obviousness and written description is laid out in Ariad, it's laid out in Power Oasis, and it is a fundamental part of the written description test. There's also been talk of whether or not inherency is the correct or incorrect standard. And I just want to be clear, I think correct inherency is the correct standard, but the board held that even if patent owner is correct, that strict necessity is not required, at best, patent owner has merely established obviousness. So regardless of whether strict necessity is or is not required, or inherency is or is not required, at best, substantial evidence shows the patent owner has only established obviousness, and under area that is insufficient to show written description support for the locking screw limitation. Wright has also raised grounds with respect to Grusin and Fernandez, which are two of the issues or two of the claims, prior art references at issue for other claims. From what I hear on Wright, they keep on saying that there is not substantial evidence to support it. But the board walked through the substantial evidence to support an obvious to combine analysis. I mean, this is a very standard analysis that they did. They went through, they identified the substantial evidence, they identified evidence in Grusin that there was, is designed to accept locking pins and bone screws. They identified evidence in Fernandez, that Fernandez adds the benefit of variable locking screws. And they said that that trade-off is acceptable, that persons of ordinary skill, based on the testimony of the experts, which, again, the board is clearly entitled to credit one expert over another, they said that that expert was more credible and that there is substantial evidence to support it. So the substantial evidence is Grusin itself, it is Fernandez itself, and it is the testimony of the expert, Paragon's expert, Mr. Castaneda. That is substantial evidence, and that is sufficient to affirm the board's finding in this matter. Lastly, Wright moves on to the Kay and Heinel combination. And here I think there is some arguments that there is an alternative holding. And I want to make sure that the board is clear. I think we were clear in our briefing, but there is no alternative holding in this case. The paragraph that Wright complains of says in the alternative, but then it says, even if we were to accept Wright's argument, and there was a dispute below about the medial line in a priority context, even if we were to accept that argument, we would still find the claims invalid. But they didn't actually hold the claims invalid based on that argument, nor did they make any factual findings based on that. It was a hypothetical comment on Wright's arguments and the inconsistencies, potential inconsistencies between Wright's argument in the priority context and Wright's argument in the obviousness context. And that comment, even if you delete that paragraph from the final written decision, the holding still stands on its own. It's not an alternative holding at all. That's a fiction. That also plays into what Wright has alleged to be a claim construction dispute. Wright's brief admits in the reply brief at 23 that the board's alternative ruling was not harmless error, as it allowed the board to find obviousness without explaining what the medial line of K looks like, either before or after modification by Heinel using Paragon's construction. That is saying that the claim construction dispute that they're raising, which they didn't raise below, below they said there was no claim construction dispute, no claims need to be construed here. That is saying that it's based on the alternative holding. If there is no alternative holding, that goes away. And there is no alternative holding here. When you look at what the board actually did for the K and Heinel, it engaged in a very standard obviousness analysis that is supported by substantial evidence. It looked at the disclosures of K and Heinel. It found K disclosed pre-contoured plates. It found Heinel also disclosed pre-contoured plates. It said based on the overlapping disclosure, there would be motivation to use some of the shapes of Heinel and take those shapes and put it into the shapes of K. And it found that an expert or a person of ordinary skill in the art would have been so motivated to do that. And it identified the evidence from both K, Heinel, Paragon's expert, Mr. Castaneda. And additionally, it actually relied on Wright's expert's testimony that an S-curve plate was known to repair clavicle fractures as of 2009. That is more than substantial evidence on which this court can affirm the board's findings below. The other argument that Wright has made is that somehow the board did not describe what the embodiment or the combined embodiment of Kay and Heinle would look like. But the board did that. And I would direct the court to Appendix 42 to 43. It walked through what it would look like. It provided an illustration. And then it took that illustration and said, on top of that, you would add a few things. You would add terminal arms. And then when you do that, you get a plate that embodies Claim 1 that has the medial line that is required of the claim. And in doing so, they looked at the disclosure of Heinle, Figure 3. And this is on Appendix 33 and 34. And they said there's no dispute that Heinle discloses an S-curve medial line. And because of that, because you're using the shape of Heinle, when you modify the plate of K, it embodies a medial line or S-curve medial line in the lateral plane. That is substantial evidence. That is sufficient to affirm the board's findings. And unless there are any other questions, I will cede the rest of my time.
Would you focus for a moment on the 443 patent and the medial line and the role of the combination of references, Kay and Heinle?
Certainly. So is Your Honor asking about what the combination of Kay and Heinle would look like and where how that medial line would appear? Is that the question? If you look on page 61 of our brief, the opposition brief, there is a picture, and this was the same picture that appeared in the board's final written decision on Appendix 41 to 43. And there it shows a bone plate that has an S-curve medial line. And in Wright's view, Wright has said that their medial line would be a series of midpoints along the plate. In Paragon's view, it would be a line that divides the plate laterally. In either case, when you look at the plate here that's shown on page 61, the line would come in the middle of the plate, and that would be an S-curve. And that's what the board found. They looked at, that's the same shape as the plate in Heinle Figure 3, which is on Appendix 33 and 34. And the board made the factual finding there, and it's supported by evidence, and Wright hasn't disputed it, that that discloses an S-curve under either party's interpretation of medial line. And so they took that and said that shape of Heinle's Figure 3 is an S-curve under either party's interpretation. This is the shape that looks just like Heinle Figure 3. And based on that, they found that the modified version of K in light of Heinle would have disclosed the claim 1 or the S-curve medial line in the lateral plane. Did that answer your question, or should I go further?
Well, yes, it still leaves in my mind a bit of uncertainty because there is a difference and as to how to focus on the difference between the prior art and at least the picture of what's being patented as to whether there is some entitlement somewheres, even if it didn't come out clearly before the board.
So I don't think, if you look on the appendix 33 and 34, which is the board's final written decision in the 443 patent, it annotates Heinle Figure 3 to show the S-curve medial line. And it does so by drawing a medial line that comes across the holes of the plate, down the center, and then up. And on the same picture that would be depicted on Appendix 42, which was reproduced in our brief, that same medial line drawn in the same way would apply to there. And so that is what the board's finding was based on, that under either party's interpretation, Figure 3 of Heinle has the S-curve medial line and also the embodiment of K and Heinle when combined would have the medial line as well.
Okay.
And I just want to be clear here too. There was no change in position between the petition and the reply. In both instances, the petition, and we'll give some sites here, in Appendix 781, talked about pre-contouring, modifying Kay's pre-contoured plate in view of Heinel to arrive at the claim invention. And the reply, which is Appendix 1135-36, did the exact same thing. The position has been consistent throughout. There was an argument raised by Wright that somehow the reply exceeded the scope of the petition. As this court knows, that's reviewed under abuse of discretion, and the board below rejected it. And there's no abuse of discretion because we just didn't change the position. Unless there are any questions about any of the issues, I'm happy to cede the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McPherson.
Judge Newman, counsel's argument with respect to the 443 that he just gave to you proves our point. If you look at the drawing that they have just identified on page 61 of their brief, that figure is not K. That figure is not Heinel. That figure was not in the petition. And our point is, even that doesn't describe for how they're interpreting what the medial line is of the combined plate. And that's taking figure one from K and bending it. So on page 61, it shows they still have not demonstrated to the board below or to this court what the combination looks like. Further, on page 58 of our brief, we identify that the board recognized that petitioner was changing its position after we responded to the petition. And on page 58 of the blue brief, the board says, based upon petitioner's reply, we understand petitioner now to have withdrawn any reliance on Heinel as disclosing an S-curve medial line having an inflection point located between two screw holes of a central trunk portion. So the board clearly understood what they said in the petition. The board allowed them to change their position and say, oh, we understand they're withdrawing that argument. And in doing so, when counsel points the board to a final written decision in the appendix at page 33, the board, if you look at that figure 3, it's annotated. The board annotated that with the board's understanding of what the medial line is by allowing the petitioner to withdraw their understanding. If you look at figure 3 as drawn there, in the petition, they said figure 3 indicated where number 5 is. That's where the inflection point is. It's a curved line in that point. The board says we're going to allow them to withdraw that, and us, the board, they drew this figure 3. They drew it as a straight line, which is inconsistent with what the petition said. And the board let them do that. And that's the problem. The patent owner shouldn't have to be chasing what the petitioner puts in there that the board then changes on its own. In addition, if you need more proof of it, in our brief at page 64, the board acknowledges, we conclude that while the petition could have more clearly articulated petitioner's position on obviousness, the clarifications provided in the reply properly respond to objections raised in the patent owner response without improperly exceeding the scope of the petition. Okay? That's improper. The patent owner is entitled to know exactly what the ground is that they're fighting. And by the board allowing them to change it and the board allowing them to put evidence on in their petition, like the figure they showed you, which is neither Heinel nor K, that's improper. And we think their argument pointed out those discrepancies between their petition and where the board ended up.
But you're not saying that Wright didn't have the opportunity to argue that point before the board just because the petition wasn't so precise?
The objections that the board identifies, they properly respond to our objections. Our objections were, you didn't define what the medial line is, so we don't know what that is. That's not an objection. We're saying that's a failure of proof. And they don't get to beef that up with like they tried to do in their reply. If you look at what the patent owner did, between pages 58 and 62 of our brief, we cut and put for the board the analysis that our expert did to determine what a medial line is and how it looks like in those plates. There's no corresponding evidence from the other side what the medial line is or how it's applied. They just said, don't listen to their evidence from their expert. But they never described in that detail. And without that detail, you can't determine whether the combination has the S-curve limitation or not. And that's the problem. At the end of the day, if you look at the final written decision, there's no description of what the modified figure one of K looks like after it's modified with Heinle. And I think that's a pure failure of proof. And the board did not require them, right, to point out the evidence in the petition. And we think that's a failure. If there's no more questions on 443, I'd like to move on to a few things with the 252 and the 253. Make no mistake that we think the board used the wrong standard under the written description law. They said there's no dispute that the written that the 2006 application does not actually disclose a locking screw. We dispute that. We've disputed that all along. There's no dispute that the 2006 application does not use the word locking screw. There's no dispute it does not expressly use the word non-locking screw. It just talks about screw and screw holes. It does have one figure, which a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand to be a non-locking screw. But that's no dispute that that term is not expressly disclosed. We think in this art, in this simple, not complicated, predictable art, when you disclose a bone plate that can have a locking screw hole or a non-locking screw hole, that is a disclosure. That's an actual disclosure of a locking screw hole. And we think the testimony of their expert backs that up. So there's no reason for the board, based upon there being no dispute, there was a dispute. There's no reason for the board to go to inherency. This is not an inherency issue, right? Inherency is directed to where you have a claim limit that has some undisclosed properties, right? But people know, person with skill in the art knows, that element always has that property. It's necessarily present. That's not one of these cases. We're not in inherency. We're into this actually discloses to a person of ordinary skill in the art. It reasonably conveys to them a locking screw. And then the board's discussion of obviousness. The key in your pocket to your front door is not an obvious to use it in your doorknob. Right? The key is intended to be used in your doorknob. It's not an obvious use. It's the same thing we have here. The use of a locking screw in a threaded screw hole is not an obvious use. It's a direct teaching. One of ordinary skill in the art knows when he sees a screw hole that he can use a screw in it, particularly when it's for a bone plate that's affixed to a bone using screws. That locking screw hole has a screw going through it to lock it to the bone. The fact that I can also take a bending device, which is threaded so I don't destroy my screw hole, can be used to bend a plate and then take the device out and put a locking screw in there, does not remove from the knowledge of a person of ordinary skill in the art that that locking screw is for a screw hole. And the board's factual finding that a person of ordinary skill in the art understood that one purpose of a locking screw, the screw hole, is a locking screw, is sufficient in this art, in this technology. That's predictable. With respect to gruesome, they cited the law about there's trade-offs and benefits. The trade-off you have between the benefits of two references, that does not trump if the combination makes the combination inoperable for its intended purpose. And in gruesome, the purpose was to eliminate the scrub necrosis. So to use a screw that will increase the instance of scrub necrosis makes gruesome inoperable for its purpose. It's not a trade-off. This is not a trade-off law where you have some benefits. This is inoperable. And under the Gordon line of cases, then there's no motivation to combine.
Okay.
Are there any questions?
Yes. I think we tried to understand the issues. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Your Honor.